Hello, Mum. I hate it here. Granny is such a bore.
Just because your granny is old doesn't mean she's boring. I'm sure your granny has a secret or two. Old people always do.
I can't believe it. My granny's a jewel thief.
I suppose I was thinking about my granny, who had actually died many years before I wrote the story. But I was thinking of how I used to spend time with her, and sometimes I'd feel it was quite boring. We'd eat cabbage soup and play Scrabble.
You did eat cabbage soup.
Yes, and, you know, she'd want to watch the snooker or something. And I think, this is a bit tedious. But then I remember asking her about her experiences when she was younger. She lived in London during the Second World War, the time of the Blitz, and she had lots of exciting stories about the houses in her street being bombed, hiding in the underground, a bus being blown up, all kinds of things like that. And made me think she'd had an exciting life before I was even born. I suppose when I was thinking then about writing a story, I was thinking that old people have exciting stories to tell. You just need to ask them.
There's something about the way you take something that you know, like the story of your grandmother and her amazing life, and then you sort of spin it off into a world of fantasy. So the idea that she might have been,
an international jewel thief.
Tell me about that process.
Well, I think an idea is like a seed, and then from that seed you can grow a tree. For example, a friend once told me a story about how they were driving to school and they used to spot an old lady on the side of the road every day, and one day they stopped to give her a lift and she got in the car and she really, really smelled, and they never gave her a lift again. And it really made me very sad, the story. I thought, well, that was a really, really sad story. He told me this story probably about 20 years ago. And then I was thinking about Mr. Stink, and I was thinking, how much can you love the smelliest person in the world? So it's not a story that only an author gets told. It's a story that anyone could get told, right? And so I suppose as an author, you're trying to pluck these little things out of the air and be inspired by them.
There's this big poster outside the Garrick Theatre advertising the stage version of Gangster Granny with a quote from you saying, the play is better than the book.
If you're sitting in a room full of people, you're more likely to laugh out loud, aren't you? I mean, and maybe people do read the books on their own and laugh and chuckle to themselves. But it's wonderful as an experience you can share. And it's very much a family show. And I think it's been successful as a book, more successful than my other books, I think, because of this intergenerational story. Her book signings, I get lots of older ladies coming up to me and going, I'm his gangster granny, So it's something people are proud of, because no one wants to think, I guess, that they're a boring old person, do they?
Oh, aren't they nice?
This is the Imperial State Crown, which has over 3,000 gems. No wonder they're all locked up and surrounded by guards. They're the most amazing things I've ever seen.
We just need to break through the glass and put them all in this carrier bag.
We're not going to get them all in there.
Well, they cost 5p now, so I only bought the one.
There's a wonderful actress playing who's obviously much younger, had great fun with the kind of semi-naked yoga and all the rest of it. Is there something about playing those older women?
I don't know why. I mean, we used to use lots of old ladies in Little Britain. I suppose it's just that you expect an old person to behave sometimes in a certain way. There's a certain stereotype, isn't there? And so when people break out of that and do something outrageous as an old lady, it just has a kind of much greater effect. I think of that Monty Python sketch where ladies are recreating famous battles. They're like a sort of WI group.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world of history is proud to present the premiere of the Batley Townswomen's Guild reenactment of the Battle of Pearl Harbor.
There are some great stars of children's TV in this cast. I gather you used to write for the Ant and Dec children's show back in the 90s. Are there lessons from children's TV first that you drew on, do you think?
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, I remember watching lots of shows on TV as a kid and not really finding them that funny, like Cracker Jack, and there'd be people doing puns. Whereas actually kids do find things like people being gunged funny. It's different, isn't it? And so I suppose it's just trying to sort of think back to when you were 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 and what you found funny. And I suppose I try to do that with the Ant and Dec show. The Ant and Dec show was, I think, a little bit edgier than some children's shows. Like, they did do spoofs of Take That, and they did things that were just a little bit outside of what had been done before in children's shows. I remember when I had the first meeting about it, the producer was a little old-fashioned, and he was saying, we're going to do a spoof of The Wizard of Oz. And I thought, why don't we spoof things that they're interested in now and make it a bit more contemporary? I'm talking about it like it's sort of, you know, The Singing Detective. It wasn't. It's not some seminal piece of television. But whatever, it was my first introduction to that, and it was my first sense of, can we expand the possibilities a bit? So, because I remember being a kid, and all I wanted to see were things that were not meant for me. So I wanted to watch The Young Ones. I wanted to watch Not 9 o'clock News. I wanted to go to the video shop and get out Scarface when I was 12, because I knew I shouldn't watch it. So I think good writing for children, and think about my hero, Roald Dahl, does this better than anyone. There's a sense of an edge, a slight sense of the forbidden about it. In The Witches, he says, these witches kill children. I mean, I think it's on like page one. And it's just absolutely terrifying. You can present quite edgy things to children and they will enjoy them.
Talking about what children want to watch, you of course know there was a whole issue about how many children had watched aspects of Little Britain. Mm. And that to some extent fueled your children's writing.
Well, I knew that lots of children liked watching the show. I think it was quite cartoony. The characters were all larger than life and we almost drew them like cartoon characters, so they always looked a certain way.
I am a lady, and I would like a lady swim, please.
Yeah, men, women, whatever, is £2.60.
That's right, a lady swim. Oh, where's my purse?
Well, it wasn't aimed at children, it was shown after The Watershed, but inevitably, in the way that I watched The Young Ones, they liked Little Britain too. And I suppose I wanted to capture a sense of that humour in something specially for children. But then I realised there was so much more you could do in a book than you can in a comedy sketch. And I realised you could go on an emotional journey with the characters. I started off doing it thinking, well, this is a nice little thing I'm doing on the side in a way, you know, thinking this is not my main thrust of my career, and it's become a really big thing.
Well, I was reading your 100th week as a best-selling children's writer. You've sold 1.3 million books this year, expected to make £17 million this year. You're outselling J.K. Rowling. You've hit on a sort of way of working. Dare I use the word formula? You know what ingredients need to go in.
You can't exactly contrive success. You can't exactly guess what kids are definitely going to want to read about.
You can a bit. Snot.
But you can't repeat yourself. Yeah, but you can't just call a book Snot and just have pictures of snot inside. It's got to have a bit more to it than that. You know, otherwise anyone would do it, wouldn't they? And the books, Grandpa's Great Escape deals with Alzheimer's. The Midnight Gang deals with child mortality. Boy in the Dress deals with identity. Mrs. Stink deals with homelessness. I feel like the books have got bigger themes to them. I'm writing a different story each time.
I'm fascinated by the range of stuff you apply yourself to so hard, whether it's the acting, the writing, quite a glamorous life as well, but also the endurance swimming.
It's been very glamorous.
Well, my brother is an endurance swimmer, so I asked him for a question, and actually he said, do you see yourself as a modern-day Byron, part artist, part lover, part swimmer?
I never thought about that, actually. No, I don't see myself as a modern-day Byron. I do like swimming. I was never sporty at school, but it was the one thing I could do. So when Sport Relief came to me and said, oh, is there anything sporty you ever want to do? It was the only thing I could think of. You know, all these things have happened by accident, not design. I didn't set out thinking as a kid, oh, I'd love to one day swim the channel, or I'd love to one day write children's books or do this. They've just come along, and I just take these opportunities. And I like the idea of taking on things that you might fail at. And if you never go out of your comfort zone, then you're never going to grow, are you? When you're looking back on your career as you're old, or one day when you die, hopefully they're going to talk about the good things you did, not the ones that ended up as the DVD extra.